focused on the facts. Chris Smith on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Hey, good to have you company. Hour two of the program, and plenty to talk about already. I do want to talk about workplace relations and what's going on with the union movement now no longer being scrutinized the way they used to be. We'll talk about that very shortly on the program. Another email from one of our viewers, and Dale has this to say. He's from Batlow in New South Wales. Make great apples in Batlow, by the way. Chris, just wanted to say that your program is excellent, and I either listened live or catch up later via the TNT radio app. Fantastic, Dale. I just need to pick you up on your criticism of Sky News regarding your assertion that they have joined the Elon Musk pylon. Try watching the late debate. They have consistently supported Musk and his decision to support free speech. I believe other Sky presenters do the same. Hold on a second, Dale. No, they don't. No, they don't. And if you go back to the editorial that I enunciated at the time last week, we were focusing on an interview that was done featuring Kieran Gilbert. And I'm sorry, I don't know whether you listened closely to what I said or listened to what Kieran Gilbert did, but it was a pro-censorship interview in which no attempt was made to push the line of transparency. It was all about supporting censorship and how bad, how terrible that moderate focus of violence was on the video featuring the bishop. And I know that there are other individual hosts who stand on the same pulpit. And I'm just telling you right now, I know how this stuff works. And unless you kick up and scream and feel passionate about censorship and support transparency, you'll be told to toe the line. Now, I don't know who's been told whatever. I'm not suggesting I do, but I do know that there are some in that organization who should be erring on the side of transparency and not on the side of censorship, but they're not. I'm with you, Dale. Be supportive of Sky News. They do a half-decent job. And here's an example. While we're talking about things that should not be taken off social media, here's a classic example of something that should be taken off, and by the people that I describe as the digital mafia, Facebook. An Arkansas woman has pleaded guilty to charges related to stealing body parts from corpses and listing them for sale on Facebook. Now, you see, if you really wanted to do your job, eSafety Commissioner Julie Inman Grant, and you actually knew the industry well, like we do because we watch it and ride it every day and every night, you would know that Facebook is criminally liable for the scams that they run unimpeded on their platform. Scams that rip off tens of millions of people, around the world. And yet you continually allow Facebook to put those on their platform, rip off people, and they know that this is a scam. Now, I've said thousands of times on this particular program the examples that I've come across. They're just examples that I have personally come across and the money that I have lost and friends have lost. And they tell me all the time about other scams that go on, and Facebook refused to take them off. They are the real crooks. Leave Elon Musk alone. Elon Musk is doing us a service by putting something on his platform that we should and must discuss and try and make a change to. Not like this. This is Facebook at its worst, and they're the ones that should be pilloried and censored by czars like you, Julie Inman Grant. Candace Chapman Scott, age 37, was working at a mortuary when she stole at least 24 boxes of human body parts from medical school cadavers. On Thursday, Scott pleaded guilty to one count of conspiracy to commit mail fraud and one count of interstate transportation of stolen property. The charges stem from Scott selling 24 boxes of human remains to Jeremy Pawley of Pennsylvania for $11,000. The body parts included fetuses, brains, hearts, lungs, genitalia, large pieces of skin, and more. Scott reportedly sold Pawley the fetus at a discount, saying he's not in great shape. Vomitous, isn't it? According to a report from the Mirror, Pawley has previously pleaded guilty to charges related to the theft and sale of body parts from both the Arkansas mortuary and the Harvard Medical School. Wow. That's incredible criminality, isn't it? But they were all sold on Facebook. And if you have censors looking at Facebook to take off what you and I write about freedom of speech, about what the government is up to, about COVID pandemics, and they do, why wouldn't they take that off? But they don't, because those individuals pay money to advertise their goods in most cases, especially bigger scammers who claim to, you know, be associated with some of the clothing manufacturers and the motorcycle and car manufacturing accessory industry. They just are allowed to sell crap that either doesn't exist or you'll never get receipt of. They allow it to happen. That's criminality. Criminality on our social media websites and platforms should be censored, not freedom of speech. We've got it all the wrong way around. This is Chris Smith on TNT.
Keeping the commitment 24/7.
I've been in the car all day and I got to listen.
Can't get enough of it.
You guys are doing a great job.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Okay, the workplace. Now, there are some very interesting developments here that I think some of our audience might want to comment on. And if you do, you know the numbers. You're very much entitled to join the conversation, no matter who is on our program. You can call in from the United States or Canada on 1-888-201-6425. From the UK, 033-0024-1026. Or from Australia and New Zealand, 1-800-670-310. A recruiter sparked furious controversy after revealing that he had rejected a Gen Z applicant who refused to spend 90 minutes on a hiring test because it looked like a lot of work. Let's bring in our recruitment expert, the founder and director of Superior People Recruitment based in Melbourne, Graham Wynn. Welcome back to TNT.
Good afternoon, Chris. How are you today?
I'm very, very well. I wonder whether you have witnessed this firsthand, where a job, a small task that you give a supposed applicant for a job says to you, gee, that looks like a lot of hard work. The employer, who goes by M. Stanfield on X, formerly known as Twitter, took to the social media platform to share his frustrations about an applicant he had interviewed for an investment analyst position. In the tweet, he explained that he had emailed the unnamed Gen Z applicant and asked them to do a financial modelling test, which would take around an hour and a half. Oh dear. But when the job seeker declined to do the task, the recruiter was immediately turned off and took to the website to voice his annoyance at the applicant's attitude, sparking a furious debate among other users, some of whom insisted that he should never have required a candidate to perform any kind of free work. My goodness, they don't want a job, do they?
I don't want a job. And a lot of the argument about that one was, well, I'm happy to spend an hour or an hour and a half if you pay me. So before he got the job, I'm happy to do the questionnaire or the report you want, but pay me for it first. And it is madness, this. I mean, I'm not sure how good your memory is, but I remember going for jobs before starting my own business, and we all had to do those Myers-Briggs tests.
Yes.
Are you an eagle or a hawk or whatever?
Yeah.
That would take you a couple of hours to
yes.
do.
Yes. And they were not work. They were actually more boring than that. They were sort of, what were they? The multiple choice questions, weren't they?
Correct. Yeah, yeah. And they would take a couple of hours, and sometimes you had to go to another office to do those and travel in to do them. But you never got paid for it. It was part of the interview process to see if you were suitable for the job. That's what you do. And I just think it's incredible these people are finding some reason or excuse not to have to work. And it does sound that's what it is. Here's another reason why I don't have to work, because I won't do these tests. And
this is a matter of attitude, surely.
Yes.
I remember my attitude sitting down doing this boring 2-hour psychological test, ticking boxes, which were totally and utterly unhelpful for whatever I wanted. But I knew that I was desperate to get a job. I really wanted, I liked the idea of working. I was prepared to do anything to get that job. I wasn't entitled in any way. So is this more about not necessarily those, not necessarily about the workforce, but more about the culture?
I think it is the culture. And I remember again, many, many years ago, I applied for a job as a general manager, and I had a two-hour test where, you know, what number comes next in the sequence, what picture comes next in the sequence, and all these multiple choice questions, followed by an hour's interview with a psychologist before I could actually get the job. Now, I didn't get paid for that, but I knew I had to go through that to get the job. And I think it's an attitude thing. If you really want a job, you'll do what you need to do. And many of our clients, particularly senior people, they'll quite often say to the candidates, okay, yep, you're shortlisted. We need you to put together like a bit of a marketing strategy. How would you market this? A bit of a sales strategy.
Yeah.
And they ask people to do that. They're not going to use the information, but it's about you setting forward. Here's how I think I can operate. Here's how I can help your business. And everyone does it. And I had a lady I placed in a job last week. She had about an hour and a half test to do, which number comes first, which picture comes next. She had to do that. And she got the job because she was prepared to spend an hour and a half doing it. She got the job. And I just think it's an attitude thing that if you really want a job, you do whatever you have to do to get that job. If you don't want the job, you find an excuse not to get it.
So what are they happy not to get a job? Are they what they don't find that having a job is necessarily compulsory to them? Like, why would you be so comfortable in creating a stir and not doing what you're told to get a job? Is it because they like what's the fallback?
Well, the fallback is a lot of these people of that generation, unfortunately, still live at home, have no expenses because they don't pay board or rent. Right. So there's no major consequences for them not working. They get paid unemployment benefits, live at home, no expenses, mum and dad pay for everything. There are no consequences. I mean, I'm sure you were the same as me. When you first started working, you paid board to your parents. That's what we did.
Yeah.
And in fact, my first 12 months of wages, I gave the whole thing to my parents and they still gave me spending money from it to teach me, you've got to learn.
Yeah.
That doesn't happen anymore. And I think there are the issues. There are no real consequences or there's no real incentive sometimes to say, I must get off my butt and work because I need this money now.
But restore my faith in that generation, please, Graham. There are applicants, surely, who would be prepared to walk on hot, broken glass from Melbourne to Geelong to get a job.
Totally, yes. It's a small percentage we're talking about, but they, unfortunately, that small percentage, everyone treats their entire generation the same, but it is only a small percentage, but they give that generation a very, very bad name, unfortunately, yes.
And for many employers, it's a really good exercise to go through because all of a sudden you discover within seconds why that employee would not be the person you should be choosing because they couldn't work in an iron lung.
Correct. And a lot of employers and recruiters, they look for a reason to say no. That's what they're sometimes looking for because quite often they've found three or four people who could potentially do the job. What they want to do is find out which ones are not the right people. So they're looking for a reason to say no.
Yeah.
And if you want to do that test, there's a no straight away. If you if you ask silly questions at the next interview, there's another reason to say no. So they're quite often looking for a reason to say no. And I know when we look at resumes when they come in, because of the volume we get, you can't interview every person. So we do look for reasons why, okay, that's a no, that's a no, that's a no. Then you spend more time looking at the other ones. If people have spelling mistakes, they don't put a suburb where they live, or put Dear Mary on the cover letter, my name's Graham, they're reasons for me to say no.
Mm.
So that's what we all do. We look for a reason to say no. And this person who wouldn't do the test, that was his no, so the employer could move on to the other ones.
He put it on a platter for the employer. He certainly did. Okay, we've got to take a quick break. I'll come back. We'll start to talk about the workplace watchdog and whether the watchdog is watching enough. We'll do that with Graham Wynn from Superior People Recruitment right after a break on TNT.
TNT's Joseph Arthur.
I wonder if you can simplify sort of the different components of the war that we're in, how it's working, what the motivation is.
The bottom line is nitrogenous fertilizers are one of the main engines, and those are being interrupted. And that's why I went to BASF twice before Nord Stream was cut, because I suspected they were going to cut Nord Stream. So I was there with Misako Ganaha at BASF, and I asked somebody inside the plant, it's a 10 square kilometer plant, right? And so I asked him, what happens if Nord Stream is interrupted? This was before it was interrupted. He said, we are dead. Well, now it's gone. It's been destroyed, right? And I predicted that publicly.
Joseph Arthur and his Technicolor Dreamcast on today's News Talk TNT.
A better business tip from TNT Radio. The benefits of advertising on today's News Talk TNT Radio should be clear to businesses of any shape or size. It can be accessed anywhere, anytime, by anybody, and is the perfect way to build brand awareness and stimulate digital activity. If you'd like more information about advertising on TNT Radio, simply fill out your details on our contact page and we'll be in touch. To find out more, go to tntradio.live.
If you're talking about it, we're talking about it. Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Okay, back to Graham Wynn. The workplace watchdog has not filed a single new case against the CFMEU for 18 months and has dropped 30% of the cases alleging construction union law breaking it inherited after Labor's election, even as builders raise concern that CFMEU disruption is pushing up project costs. The Fair Work Ombudsman has revealed it discontinued or partially discontinued 12 of the 41 cases transferred from the Australian Building Construction Commission when the Albanese government scrapped the industry regulator in 2022. What's your impression of that story, Graham Wynn? It wouldn't surprise, would it?
It doesn't surprise, to be honest with you. I think most people who've been around understand that the union movement does certainly fund the Labor Party. We all accept that, I think. So there's no issues there. And I think when the Labor Party's on the nose a bit, they push back from these things and allow the union to have far more input and control on what they're doing and therefore don't take action against them. I think the initial thing was it's like a token gesture, we're going to do something about it, then do nothing about it, but they've said they're going to, so it looks good, but they do nothing about it. And the unions at the moment, particularly construction, some of the deals they're getting through, there was a recent one in Queensland, which everybody else looked at and thought, how has that possibly got through with the extra money their workers are getting and was not challenged at all? And some crazy amount of money they're getting up there now, these extra bits and pieces they're allowed. And no one put a stop to it and said, straight through, all approved, signed off. And yet the construction industry is crashing because builders can't cope with costs and labour is one of the biggest costs that they've got. So there's a real problem with this. They're pushing for so much more for their workers, but the companies are going broke because they can't afford it.
And going broke at a rapid rate of knots. You read this just about every week in any of the papers, Graham, another major construction company falling by the wayside.
Absolutely. It's a weekly thing and you just wait for who is it this week, basically, and which construction company has gone broke. And it's across the country. It's a national problem, this. And labour costs, they're saying it's cost of material, but labour costs are also killing a lot of these construction businesses.
That's an interesting insight. I made mention before about censorship and about what to do with social media giants, the tech giants. And my argument has always been, you don't have to look far on Facebook to find things that are criminal, that are out-and-out scams that have been reported over and over again massively, and nothing is done about them because obviously Facebook just wants to take the money from the advertisers because it's worth those scammers to pay the advertising money because they get so much benefit from the scam. And yet, you know, you've got the eSafety Commissioner trying to take down a very moderate piece of violence that has an enormous message for the world. And I wonder whether you've come across similar not necessarily illegal, but falsehoods on platforms like Facebook that you've complained about or others have complained about, but nothing is done.
Yes. I mean, unfortunately, Facebook, a number of people create a profile on Facebook and for whatever reason, they say they work for Superior People Recruitment and they then contact other people on Facebook and say, we've got this great job. Normally travel is what they do or that sort of industry, travel, cash in hand roles. Unfortunately, a couple of people have contacted us and said, just making sure this person works for you. And no, they don't. So we find their profile, we report it to Facebook, and Facebook come back and say, they've done nothing wrong. And the profiles stay there. So we have to sort of threaten criminal action directly against these people creating these fake profiles for them to try and take them down. It goes on regularly. Most weeks we hear from somebody who's pretended to be working for us and contacting people to try and get money from them. We can't control it. There's nothing we can do to control this.
That is outrageous.
Yeah.
And you complain about it and you have receipt of that complaint, do you?
Yes, receive that complaint. We get it back from Facebook saying, we acknowledge that you've flagged this profile. 24 hours later, you get another response from Facebook saying, We've looked at it. They're doing nothing wrong. Therefore, the profile stays up.
How can you say they're doing nothing wrong when they've got evidence from you that that person is not connected to your business?
Well, the problem is that when you get the response back, it just says, we think there's nothing wrong. So you can't reply back again with what you think is wrong. And when you do a report to Facebook, you don't. There's no facility to actually say, this person's pretending to work for me, they don't work for me. There's no. You only get little tick boxes, and you say fake profile or it's a scam. There's no facility to put in what is the issue.
And that's so intentional.
Yeah, of course it is. So they just look at the profile and say, oh, it's a person's name with a picture. There, it's okay. But the one we had over the weekend, we found it was a picture of a young lady, very attractive young lady. But when you went into the actual detail of that, her profile page, it was actually a male from South Africa.
Wow.
Who was pretending to work for me and contacting people saying, we've got these travel jobs, cash in hand. And we can't control this.
And when this goes bunk and people legitimately try and get involved in it, they realize that either the person that's pretending to be you is a scammer or you're a scammer.
Correct. And it reflects on me. And again, it's very frustrating this. And I think Google reviews are just as bad. You know, like you can't opt out of Google reviews. And so we get negative Google reviews from people who've never worked with us, had nothing to do with us whatsoever. But just because they feel like it, they go and stick some horrible negative review on Google, you report it to Google, and they say, well, it stays there. And it's just, we have no control over these things. Yeah. And I think these platforms should be held much more accountable for what goes on their platform.
Without a doubt. You know, we're talking about censorship of things that make a very good point for, you know, the population of the world, but we allow the criminality to continue. They're the things that should be censored. That's a really interesting point that you make on that last scam. And you just wonder, like, it could be quite possible that a competitor of yours has a little scheme going on in their office whereby they plant these negative comments about your business. Could it be that? Could that be the case?
It could well be the case. I mean, certainly restaurants, cafes have identified that's happened before. Their competitors have left negative reviews.
Yeah.
We got targeted by a union 18 months ago because we did a radio interview and we made some comments they didn't like. So they got all their members to send negative reviews in our Google reviews. It was quite horrendous ones. People who had no dealing with whatsoever, but we can't take them down.
Yeah.
And yet that can impact my business. People look at these reviews and they go, oh, look at these bad reviews. They're fake. Yeah. There's nothing you can do about it.
It's interesting. Mike, one of our viewers, has gotten onto our chat box on tntradio.live. And Mike says, Facebook erases complaints. They don't allow replies. I don't think humans respond to Facebook complaints. It is very hard to complain about Facebook. How does Graham Wynn know the Google reviews are false? Well, because they're dealing with people that don't exist, right?
Correct, yes, exactly right. So the people either put anonymous because they don't want their name known, but other times you can normally see from, you can look at IP addresses, you can find out people who they are.
Yeah.
And you know clearly, we've had no dealing with these people at all.
All right.
And unfortunately, you're just targeted, yeah.
It's just, this is where the tech giants need to be taken to task, not on the things that they are being taken to task on at the moment. All right, last question for you, Graham. Amid the rise of AI and ChatGPT, adaptability in the workplace is the top skill of the moment, according to LinkedIn's report, the 2024 most in-demand skills. Most employers realize that while AI is poised to impact some roles, it's still overhyped. There are many jobs that AI won't be able to replace because they still require a human touch. In fact, McKinsey predicts that 8 out of the top 10 skills future workers will need are soft skills like adaptability. There's a good topic to talk about. Do you concur with what that report suggests?
Totally, yes. I think AI is overhyped at the moment. I think it's the buzz thing, but I think it will definitely wane off a little bit. But the people we're placing in jobs at the moment, employers are looking for that soft skill, personality, attitude, enthusiasm, adaptability,
the EQ.
Type of person they are. And AI can't do that.
Yeah.
It just can't do that.
So you're looking for someone with EQ, street smart, adaptability.
Exactly right, yes, which is why the guy who wouldn't do that test online earlier didn't get the job. But certainly, EQ is the real thing these days. Employers are looking for a fit. That's what they're after, and AI can't do that.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, I tried on AI. I can't remember which server it was. But anyway, I tried on AI to get an editorial written on a particular subject, on a particular argument on the subject. It came out, it was unusable. And a lot of people said, oh, you can get AI to start doing your stuff. You just put in the main ingredients of the argument and off you go. It was robotic. It was clinical. It was not in any kind of, like, it wasn't the sort of thing I would say or I would even pretend to say. It was just right off the Richter. And, you know, I couldn't use any slabs. I couldn't cut and paste. I couldn't use any of it. I just had to start again. And it's now browned me off in terms of AI ever since.
I'm certainly not using that sort of technology in my business and have no intention of, because we're a people business and AI is not a person.
Yeah, yeah. That's a good, that's a really, really good insight. You've been fantastic today, Graham. Thank you so much for your time.
My pleasure as always, Chris. Take care.
Much appreciated. From Superior People Recruitment, he is the founder and director, Graham Wynn. What an interesting segment that was. An interesting segment for a number of reasons. The workplace and adaptability. In other words, what you're doing when you're selected may not be what you're going to do, but it's going to be have to be adapted. So you better have the kind of intuition, the kind of widespread skill set and adaptability to fit in with the company. That's what people want. That EQ, the ability to understand the emotional quotient involved in what's required in the workplace. Interesting. Let's take a break. We're going to do all of that. We're going to discuss a major decision by the Supreme Court of Victoria recently about COVID vaccine mandates. We'll do that very shortly. But first, let's go to the newsroom. A news update on TNT.
News.
There is a difference.
What's on the schedule for today?
A little less yappity yap and a little more
news.
Yay.
Now, TNT Radio News.
Matt Boylan here with your TNT headlines. Australia's Prime Minister has been accused of abusing his power after allegedly gaslighting a woman and making her cry at a national rally against domestic violence in the country's capital. There are renewed calls for the United Nations to lead an international investigation into the bombings of Russia's Nord Stream pipelines. And Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky has been accused of lying to the public by downplaying the true extent of his country's military losses.
We're the pinup boys and poster girls for free speech. We just don't look as impressive as Vladimir Putin shirtless on a horse. Yeah. 24/7, 365. We never stop sifting fact from fiction, misinformation from the truth. From government overreach to the latest on mandates, big tech censorship to propaganda gone mad. Listen to TNT Radio and get the news and views direct from our expert presenters and commentators anywhere you go. Ask Alexa or Google to play TNT Radio or download the TNT Radio app for free from the App Store or Google Play. Today's news talk. This is TNT Radio.
Hey, good to have you back. Now, I wanted to tell you something about the EV market, because as you know, in most major countries in the world, the backside has fallen out of the EV market. The demand is not coming up to the levels of supply. Plenty of EV cars sitting in car lots right around the world, but no one willing to pay the exorbitant amount of money to drive them and try and find the infrastructure to keep them charged, which was always going to be the problem. You've got the likes of Toyota saying that we're going to back off to a large degree on electric vehicles because we believe they'll only make up 30% of the manufacturing market worldwide. 30%. Not 100% like many countries think, like the Tories think in the UK. No. 30%. That's the head of Toyota. And unlike Chris Bowen, the climate change minister in Australia, everyone will be driving an electric car. Pig's bum they will. They won't be doing that. Go and ask Mr. Toyota with a D and he'll tell you 30% of the market. Well, I'm going to tell you about Ford and electric vehicles. Some new information, some new data that's been released over the weekend, which just shows that when it comes to electric vehicles, Ford is doing its dough majorly. And I'll go through those details in just a short moment. But as I mentioned to you last week on the show, Fighters for Freedom and Bodily Autonomy have just had a big victory with a recent judgment in the Supreme Court of Victoria. Victoria Police lost their Supreme Court case for charging and reprimanding police officers who refused the COVID jabs. Now, in this case, leading senior constable Simon Peter Shearer took the Chief Commissioner of Victoria Police to the Supreme Court after being charged and subsequently reprimanded for failing to receive any dose of the COVID-19 jab. Now, this is massive news, especially off the back of what the Supreme Court in Queensland ruled the previous month. Most mainstream legacy media, guess what they did with this major story out of the Supreme Court? Ignored it. They couldn't possibly go against the government narrative, not mainstream media. They're there to support government when they lie, when they tell us mistruths. My next guest has been following this issue very closely. Crystal Mitchell was acting senior sergeant with Victoria Police. After serving Victorians for 16 years as a police officer, she resigned over a matter of conscience in relation to policing of the COVID-19 restrictions. It was a dramatic way to make a point.
The deadline for essential workers needing their first dose is now less than a week away. A senior police officer has quit the force as she slammed the government for its handling of the COVID pandemic and vaccine mandate.
Acting Senior Sergeant Crystal Mitchell has gone rogue, outraged at Daniel Andrews' handling of the pandemic.
He is responsible for the increase in violence that has occurred. The police are now there to enforce a law that says, well, you're here and I have to arrest you and I have to fine you.
The 16-year veteran handed in her resignation after speaking out on social media.
All of my friends that are working the front line and are suffering every day enforcing show directions that the vast majority, or certainly a great majority, don't believe in and don't want to enforce.
There you go. So it's based on lockdowns, COVID restrictions, and of course the restriction on the police themselves that they had to have a COVID vaccination. Crystal Mitchell joins us live from Melbourne. Crystal, welcome to TNT.
Thanks, Chris. First time. Happy to be here.
Good to have you with us. Well, this is such an important victory. What are the implications for other police officers who fought the jab mandate, such as yourself? What goes on from here? Or is the Labor government and the police force too proud to admit defeat?
Well, I think yes to your last part, too proud to admit defeat, but we'll wait and see. We've got a four-week appeal period, which we need to wait and see what Victoria Police's response will be. In terms of how this will affect other police officers, this particular court case related to the Victoria Police manual and a policy that was implemented after the Chief Commissioner's instructions edict. So initially when the mandates came in, the Chief Commissioner issued a what's called a CCI and said you must get vaccinated, and many members who refused were fired under the Chief Commissioner's instructions. After they got rid of the CCI, they brought in the Victoria Police policy on COVID-19 vaccinations, and that's what this police officer was fighting against. He received a reprimand for failing to receive the COVID-19 vaccinations under the VPN policy. And that's what the judge found in favour of the officer, that his failing to receive the COVID-19 vaccine did not breach the Victorian Police manual. So there's a very interesting case here to look at and review. Any other police officers that either suffered a reprimand or were dismissed, or any other of the sanctions that you can receive under the disciplinary process, to see whether or not those police officers are also entitled to either some form of compensation or their jobs back or for their reprimand to be quashed, as was in this case.
Well, their reprimand needs to be quashed, for starters, but whether they want their job back or their compensation, that's a no-brainer, isn't it?
I would have thought so. There's many police officers that don't want their jobs back. They do want compensation. There are quite a few that are still waiting for their jobs. And I'm really hopeful, Chris. This is a really positive win. And when I quickly crunch the numbers on the cases that have occurred here in Australia and a couple overseas, New Zealand and New York come to mind, we've got 8 wins in the win column
And I think maybe four in the learnings. As Tony Nikolic said, we don't call them losses, we call them learnings. And every time there is a court case brought to court on one of these vaccine mandates, we learn something. We learn what the position is of the judges. We learn what it is that they say that we needed to do better on next time. And let me tell you, I think there are solicitors everywhere that are reading the ratio decidendi of all of these cases, and they are forming together strong to build more cases and bring them to court. I think right now, oh, sorry, you were going to jump in and say something there?
No, no, no. I'm just going to ask, if you wind back to when all of this was handed down, and I know that there was this incredible impetus to control the public, to make sure people were plastered in their lounge rooms, to make sure they got close to their family, which of course only spread the disease, and they couldn't go to the park and certainly couldn't go anywhere where there was open air, because although that was a good place to have any kind of flu, they didn't want you to do that. So when all this was going on, I understand the impetus to control everyone, including police included. But surely someone in the legal department of the Victorian Police Department should have done their due diligence and realised that any kind of edict to police about COVID vaccines was unlawful.
You would have thought so. And that's something that a few solicitors have mentioned, that just because the government brought in a mandate doesn't mean that every employer then had to go along with it. They did have a legal responsibility to get their own legal advice and make the determination as to whether or not what the government was saying was in fact legal. Not to mention the fact that many of these employers have fired and dismissed their employees as a result of refusing the mandates. But that was never an edict from the government. The government didn't say, if your employers don't get vaccinated, you have to fire them. So that's on the employers. And we're seeing cases throughout this country. We've had cases in South Australia, WA, Queensland and New South Wales, and they are in the positive for people who have been vaccinated essentially against their will. We've seen two cases in the personal injury claim tribunal in New South Wales where two people who suffered psychological injury as a result of the pressure and the bullying to be vaccinated have won compensation claims against their old employers. And we will continue to see more of that, I think, as these cases progress.
Look, this is a juggernaut, Crystal, isn't it? A juggernaut in favour of the rights of police officers.
Oh, absolutely. I think that if the courts did nothing for the next 10 years but assess the cases that are going to be brought forward in relation to mandates, everybody is going to have plenty of jobs, because the amount of grievances that exist in this context is just massive.
Yeah. What about the Queensland decision? That must have played some role in what happened in Victoria, surely.
That was in relation to human rights, and right. This case didn't touch on that,
but I'm with you.
I certainly think that there is a case to mount, because we do have human rights protections here in Victoria, and that will be a great challenge.
And in terms of the relationship between the public and police, I think the whole COVID pandemic lockdown period put a gigantic canyon between police and the public, and the public's faith and trust in police, and it wasn't the police fault.
No, but we were following orders does not cut it anymore, and I certainly would have thought that we would have learnt that from history. But, Chris, the issue also is that whilst we've got people and police officers and public servants and civilians challenging mandates that no longer exist for them, in Victoria, firefighters and healthcare workers are still fighting mandates. They haven't stopped. They're being denied their ability to work in their chosen careers. And I think that it's really disappointing that the firefighter commanders that are in charge, I don't know what their rank structure is called, but that they're ignoring the overwhelming evidence that the COVID-19 vaccine did not do what the government promised that it would do. They promised it would reduce the spread and the lethality of COVID. It hasn't done that. So even if you believed that employers brought in mandates in good faith, thinking that it was the right thing to do, you can't possibly think that now.
No.
When there is overwhelming evidence to support that mandates did not work, they didn't achieve the intended outcome. So why are you still doing that? And I think that it's because these employers, they are rats in a corner, and they are prepared to fight to the death instead of admitting that they were wrong.
But Chris, if they want to play that game, well, let's play chicken. We're not moving.
Mm. That's very, very true. You make a couple of really good points. Now, the mainstream media's coverage of the Supreme Court victory in Victoria, it must have been massive, Crystal, was it?
Oh, yes. You know, this the first big case for Victoria, a great, fantastic win. You know, it was all over Channel 7, 9 and 10 and all of the other news channels.
Not.
I don't think I've seen it anywhere. Not exactly.
I think it was printed in The Age. I saw it in The Age. I'm nearly sure it was mentioned in The Age. I might have been wrong.
Mm.
But the fact that they have gone on to ignore this is just testament to the mainstream media swallowing the government narrative. And even after the pandemic, even after what we now know to be true, they're still swallowing it.
Oh, absolutely. And look, it's going to get to the point where it's just undeniable and they are going to have to start talking about this. I mean, the fact that, you know, we had our very first case in New South Wales way back in 2021, and it was Kassam v. Hazard, and they tried to fight in the New South Wales Supreme Court on the bodily autonomy, and the judge said that basically they lost the case because we didn't have a Bill of Rights. Fast forward to February 2022, and New Zealand High Court found in favour of police and defence because they had a Bill of Rights, and they said the mandates were in opposition to the Bill of Rights, and they won. Interestingly, in New York, they also found in favour of police, and the state was ordered to reinstate and back pay every single police officer that they fired over mandates. So this Bill of Rights issue really comes into play here, and it's something that I think that we need to start having a serious conversation about in the Australian context.
Yeah, we conducted a survey on this program last Wednesday on the Bill of Rights, and the overwhelming majority were in support of a Bill of Rights. I want to take a break. I want to come back and talk to you further, but I also want to talk about excess deaths, if I may, and a few other bits and pieces. Crystal Mitchell is my guest at the moment right here. We'll take a break and come back and talk further about this major victory in the Supreme Court of Victoria over COVID lockdowns and mandates. This is Chris Smith on TNT.
Our beautiful world is changing, withering, dying by the hands of those who don't value nature, even though we all depend on it for life itself. But there is hope. Together with caring friends, the Nature Conservancy can restore our lands, heal our waters, and save our wildlife with big solutions only nature can provide. But every day we lose more of the places we love, and we urgently need to save endangered lands, waters, and wild species. The actions we take today will determine the tomorrow we leave to our children and grandchildren. The water they drink, the air they breathe, the beauty they experience. To learn more about how you can help protect and conserve our beautiful world, visit nature.org today.
Whatever happened to good? It's a word that gets thrown around a lot, and it's become our automatic answer to so much.
Hey, how's things?
Good.
Your mum, your weekend?
Good, good. Is good even that good anymore? At the Salvos, we believe good deserves better. Let's reclaim its true meaning. To us, good has always been about making a difference, and good never picks or chooses who it helps. Isn't it time we all remember what good really means?
The voice of a changing world, Chris Smith, on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
I'd like to get your comment, Crystal Mitchell, on something that I noticed is occurring in New South Wales. And I think the same exists for fire brigade officers in Victoria. But the ridiculous situation where those who were sacked from their position as police officers because they wouldn't take the jab, they can't come back to the role they had or come back into the force anymore. But those who don't have the jab and are new entrants through the academy can join the police force in New South Wales. Don't you think that is totally and utterly ridiculous?
It is, absolutely. The fact is that you've got these police officers that have had their name tarnished. They were charged with a disciplinary offence. And I used to work at Professional Standards Command, the area that compiles a brief of evidence for discipline charges and criminal charges against police officers. And the serious misconduct and the gross misconduct charges that were essentially made up to support the refusal of a vaccine mandate were absolutely disgusting. Those charges are generally reserved for very serious internal offending.
Corruption.
Absolutely. Or for Salas, which is our area that investigates sexual misconduct. Yeah. So these are charges that are generally reserved for very serious matters.
How ridiculous.
It is ridiculous, and you've got police forces all over the country bleeding staff. They've got not enough people to attend serious armed robberies, serious violent crime, and you've got these police officers that don't have any other job that they want to go into or that they feel that they have a skill set to go into. They just want to get their jobs back, and I just don't understand why we're not letting that happen. It's pigheadedness.
Just ridiculous. As Mike says on our chat box on tntradio.live, where is the Royal Commission into this?
Yes. Well, look, I just don't think that we're going to see one from a state-based perspective until we have a change of government in this state.
Yeah.
From a Commonwealth perspective, they did a very average one, in my opinion. It hasn't actually resolved anything. There's been no recompense for people that have suffered. We need a proper Royal Commission, and we need to make sure that this doesn't happen again, because we were supposed to learn our lessons. We haven't. By God, if we don't get this right, then, what are we doing?
All right, another story today, and I'm sure you'll link this story to what your experiences have been, but 20% more sudden cardiac arrests are occurring in Victoria than 5 years ago. Mainstream media is now covering this, but they're dancing around the elephant in the room to what could have possibly changed over the past 3 years, Crystal, to cause such a spike in heart attacks. Like, you can't have your head in the sand. I'm sure that 100% of those spike in heart attacks are not caused by adverse reactions to vaccines. But don't tell me that some of them are not connected.
It's climate change, Chris.
Oh, that's right. Sorry. Yes. Sorry. I should have realized it's global boiling. You're right.
That's right. That's right. It's very concerning. I really hope that we do see a proper inquiry from a coronial inquest perspective into these deaths. I don't hold my breath, but, we will persevere, and we just need to keep championing and speaking loudly about these issues.
You must, if you can find a media organisation willing to take your interview. Now, tell me, what are you up to now that you're no longer part of the police force?
I live on a farm in the Yarra Valley. So I'm busy tending to animals and a farmhouse and just taking care of my husband.
Do you miss being in the force?
There's elements of my job that I miss, the camaraderie, the feeling of satisfaction when you do a good job. But of the coppers that are still in the job that I speak to, it sounds like a very different place to the one that I was a part of, and they're miserable, and I don't miss that. I don't miss the toxicity, the poor workplace culture of managers, poor decisions that clearly are still being made in the organisation today. So in short, I think that there's more ticks in the box of happy to be out than in the box of missing it.
Good on you. Yeah, I've got various contacts in the Victoria Police, and they say the same thing to me as well, very much in the same vein. Thank you so much, Crystal. Much appreciated. We will be happy to take your interview on this network as often as possible. Whenever you have an update on these in these areas, let's put it to air. You won't get the same service elsewhere, though.
Thanks, Chris. I appreciate it, and I will certainly keep you updated in 4 weeks' time.
Thank you, Crystal. Much appreciated. All right, Crystal Mitchell, acting senior sergeant with Victoria Police. She could have been an inspector by now, but look what's happened. And they've been found out through various Supreme Court decisions right around the country. None of them will admit defeat because they can see massive compensation payments and they can see massive loss of face. But it is something that is a clear, clear injustice that needs to be corrected. It's just awful. And the number of great people that no longer work for our various state police forces because of this garbage and these demands and these orders about taking jabs, just incredible. Just incredible. Now, a couple of quick things. I wanted to tell you about Ford. Ford lost, listen to this, this is one quarter of 2024, one quarter. They lost $1.3 billion in the first quarter of 2024 alone. They're losing money and destroying wealth, not by choice, but because governments are pushing the insanity of net zero. Now, this has been posted a short time ago by Craig Kelly, who we speak to quite often from One Nation. It's another example, he says, of everything to do with net zero damaging the economies of Western nations and handing an economic, political and military advantage to communist China. You see, China's not going down this path at all because they think they don't have to. And the United Nations says they don't have to. So they don't. They go down the coal-fired power plant building phase while the rest of us are blowing them up and putting additional prices on energy for residences and businesses and corporations. Can you see the insanity of all of that? And meanwhile, the likes of Ford, who are trying to do the right things to buy electric vehicles, are suffering as well. This is from CNN New York. Ford's electric vehicle unit reported that losses soared in the first quarter to $1.3 billion or $132,000 American dollars for each of the 10,000 vehicles it sold in the 3 months of the year. Can you fathom that? One vehicle going out to one particular customer, say in the state of wherever in the United States, they lose $132,000 on that vehicle, one vehicle. And it, of course, drags down earnings for the company overall. Reducing wealth for what? So that we can save the planet? No, it won't save the planet. The EV unit, which Ford calls Model E, sold 10,000 vehicles in the quarter. That in itself is a shocker because that is down 20% from the number it sold a year earlier. That's how bad the bum has fallen out of the electric vehicle market across the world. You've got a 20% drop year on year from last year to this year in that one quarter. 20% drop. People have just gone, no, I'm not buying an electric vehicle. And its revenue plunged 84% to about $100 million, which Ford attributed mostly to price cuts for EVs across the industry. So to get them off the lot, you see what's happening, to get them off the lot, and the lots of chockers full of electric vehicles, they're having to discount them. And every time they discount them, they lose money to the stage where in this first quarter of this year, they lose $132,000 because it costs too much to produce them. And to sell them, they've got to lose that amount of money. This is what net zero is all about, whether it's producing energy that costs so much to create, that is, windmills and solar panels that create so much to produce and replicating transmission wires and networks, all of that money to produce what? A subsidized industry. EV vehicles, massively subsidized industry to the tune of $132,000 per vehicle in Ford's case. Can you believe it? That resulted in the $1.3 billion loss before interest and taxes and the massive per-vehicle loss in the Model E unit. In other words, the Model E project for Ford is a complete and utter disaster for Ford. Complete and utter disaster. Now, here's something you may be interested in, a little bit lighter, but something that you might be enjoying. I'm a bit of an ice cream and chocolate nut, to my detriment. And I can't get enough of chocolate and I can't get enough of ice cream, you see. Usually late at night so I don't get in trouble. Well, this is interesting. Snapchat has got something that you may be very, very keen to be part of. Let me just get the page up because it just disappeared on me. Just bear with me, bear with me. We'll get this. Snapchat, here it is. Here it is as I come down the page. There it is. Okay. Mates Day, which is May 8, as in mate, right? Mates Day is all about celebrating friendship. So Snapchat and Gelato Messina, great ice cream, are buddying up to mark the occasion, bringing besties together to make unforgettable memories filled with good times and gelato. What could make your day more than enjoying a scoop of Messina with a mate even sweeter by it costing absolutely nothing? Don't you love something for free? Snapchat is giving away free scoops of super special gelato flavour at Messina stores nationwide for the perfect excuse to get the crew together this Mates Day. Now, I'm not going to tell you too much more because it's all about Snapchat, and you'll learn about it if you go to Snapchat. And I'm not here to produce an ad for them, all right? So forget about that. But you're going to get free Messina ice cream if you get your mates involved in Snapchat, all right? So if you're interested in that and you like your ice cream as I do, I'm not on Snapchat. I might consider it later tonight. You should look forward to all of that. I've run out of time already. Sonia Poulton will be with you after the news. Let's get together at the same time tomorrow. So much more to talk about. There's plenty to talk about. We'll do that together this time tomorrow, right here on TNT.